you know, you were talking about what is a professional practice or what is an active studio. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of different places for this to go. And I think, you know, as far as owning a discussion, you know, there's this question of your role and our role. There's our role as the artist, there's our role as a student, there's our role as a professor, and it doesn't really work unless we're all kind of doing this on a couple different levels. So it's how do we engage in this kind of as a community? Being at the Core Farm and what Aaron's idea about how to bring this together, you know, it kind of should level the playing field. But there's also this, how do I navigate this space that I'm in now, or how do I navigate any other kinds of spaces? Because our practices are all very different and all really similar. So I don't know if there's a question there yet. I'm just trying to like figure out how to open up this conversation.
Maybe one place to start is what we have here in a sense, which we usually don't have, which Aaron alluded to, that most of the time you guys don't have access to how we are artists, how we make our process,
sure,
how we actually work physically in space. Which is a big part of learning is just that sort of modeling behavior. Like that's one of the major sort of educational theories out there is that we model how to act, and then you guys sort of pick up on it.
Right.
In a completely nonverbal way or a completely physical way or something like that. And that part of the process isn't usually there.
Yeah. And also, you know, the other unique thing that you should think about too is like that we talked about this a little bit when we were in Ireland. It's like, no matter what you do, like no matter what I did in Ireland, I was your guys' teacher, mm-hmm. and there were things that couldn't be broken, and we talked about that. Like in the end, I have to submit grades for you guys, so I always have kind of something over you. In this situation, we really don't necessarily have anything over you, you know. Like there are people here, most of you. I mean, you two I'm going to have in the fall, but the rest of you I might not never have be in my class again. So I don't have that kind of thing over you. So there's a kind of a, we can kind of break through that barrier a little bit, maybe, potentially. You know, it's kind of the...
Or how do you leave school, and how do you move on to the professional world, whether it be MFA or whether it be just working, and then we become colleagues of sorts.
Yeah.
So I guess all we have is respect for each other. At that point, after that, maybe you don't, you know, maybe it's over then. But I don't know, is there a question you guys might have? I mean, this is your chance, by the way. When I talk about being active, this is your chance to ask Chris something, and we'll talk about stuff. We can keep on talking. That's easy. That's what we do. So,
that is what we do.
In retrospect, I wish last night I wish we would have shut our 4 minutes of...
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean,
just to level the...
Right. Speaking of that, I mean, I know you guys probably don't have things prepared as far as, like, images are concerned, but I still would like to hear what your interests are at very level.
You can look at my sculpture for 4 minutes, because I have a sculpture here.
All right.
I don't know. This was a totally unexpected thing, so... You guys probably don't know because I didn't know this was going to happen, but I have a sculpture up on the, just in the area on the second floor where all the sculpture is, but it's out in the hall, kind of by the steps. It's a, if you're a St. Cloud student, hopefully you recognize it immediately because it's the column in the gallery shrunk down to like 40% of its size. And then crap, like pictures caulked onto it, so.
Why did you call pictures in this room?
Oh, man. Because that's what happens in to gallery walls, I guess. Right? Boy, I'm glad I came up with that quick.
That answers all my questions.
I thought so.
I have a question. I'm not familiar with, I'm not in any of your classes or anything. I'm not from, who are you and where are you from and what are you doing at the Core Farm, I guess.
Are you talking to Aaron?
All of us.
To everyone who's been initiating this.
This is Aaron Van Dyke, and he's kind of our guy that organized
this event with in cooperation with the Poor Farm. But we're four institutions from Minneapolis.
Okay.
And so we are looking at sophomores to seniors, people who have just graduated an undergraduate program. And then there's some teachers and a few other, you know, invited guests. We have University of Minnesota, Minneapolis College of Art and Design, Northwestern College, and the St. Cloud University.
I'm from, I'm a senior at my undergraduate at the Milwaukee.
So we just thought
I'd join them.
We thought we did, we thought we did, you know, it was a invite of, we didn't, it wasn't just an open blanket call.
Right, we invited specific students that we knew, that we kind of knew would participate in this thing, and we trusted and would be good. And part of it, I mean, part of my thing is, you guys should know each other from the different schools, and you don't get a chance to do that, really.
Never happens.
And so I'm hoping that, you know, you go back, and, you know, in an ideal world, you'll all have everybody's numbers and email, and you'll all be, like, getting together every once in a while. But even in, even if nothing else, you'll go to openings and see each other and say, hey, hi, you know, and talk to each other a little bit.
Yeah, is there like an email list?
We can make one. Yeah,
we can make one.
You kind of have one from what I was sending out, but I can make something with names attached to it probably and email it to you.
I mean, is this everyone? You can just like send around a piece of paper and
write
it down.
Yeah, but I don't want to have to type it in and then type it in wrong. Because I have them all on my computer already, so. I can just copy and paste.
Also, I would be interested in that, like, getting in touch with professors from the schools to, like, have longer conversations.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I mean, studio visits and stuff like that.
Or just to, like, have coffee and talk about something.
Yeah, yeah,
that'd
be cool.
You know, yeah, I would appreciate that.
One idea for you guys, too, is, like, have critique clubs. Just kind of rotate around.
MCAD tries to do a couple general fine arts critiques every year, and half the time it doesn't happen, but I think anyone who'd want to get on the mailing list or something would be more than welcome to have. You know,
well, what we have here is like a larger sort of sampling audience of committed people, so even if only like five people show up, it's still a great conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's something that's kind of a little bit different. And you get different language, like we talk about things in different ways. Mm-hmm.
Well, so what do you guys think you're missing? Aaron, you're approaching us, you're here for a reason. Is there something in the education or the practice that you guys think you still want, you're not getting it, or you want to see it, or is there something you guys...
Or even that you think you can't get in school that you came here for?
Not even came here for, whatever. What could we do better? What could we be doing, you know?
Well, honestly, like, I mean, I didn't even participate in this earlier, but, like, everything kind of, like, is the same format. Like, when the walk with you guys happened, like, that kind of thing. Like, you learn more about a faculty member. It's, like, a casual kind of thing instead of, like, this weird interface of, like, being in a classroom. Like, I'd love to, like, I don't know, weed a garden with, like, a faculty member. Something like that. Like, something, like, with a task. And, like, I mean, I know that sounds weird and crazy and doesn't happen in school, but, like, you get conversations that you never really thought about.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure how to initiate that either, like, in a class setting.
When I don't know if this happens in installation class or any of those classes, but when I went to MCAD for my undergrad, and we had this great visiting artists program where it was, you know, 16-week semester. A visiting artist would come for 4 weeks, and then a new visiting artist would come for the next 4 weeks, and so you'd get four of them. And one of the, and we do, like, one of them was up that I, the class, one class I was in, we did a kind of a public art thing with, do you know Mel Ziegler? Do you guys know Mel Ziegler? And Kate Erickson died a couple of years ago, but they were, so we did this, like, thing where we were, like, painting the blue house.
Yeah, something like that.
Right, and we were doing that, and it's like, so there are ways. I don't know, does that not happen ever? Does there
not really. I mean, like, when, for instance, like, when we were painting the benches and making them, it was, like, an opportunity to have that, and, like, it's just kind of, like, you're not even focused on the conversation, so you're doing something else, and it just kind of sort of, like, happens. And, I wish there was more of that, and I'm not sure if manual labor is... I'm fine with that. Like, maybe we should all shovel snow together when the winter comes.
Go door to door, see, like,
yeah.
Some old people, so you maybe need a
like, just doing a task that isn't, like a direct thing, like a direct conversation, maybe. I'm not sure how that works, but...
Oh, there are ways to do that.
Yeah.
I always thought, it's a big group for that, but I always thought playing cards served that purpose really well because you have that distraction of an activity.
Card club.
Reason to make fun of each other, and, but at the same time, just the conversation goes on.
Yeah. Kicking the ball around just while we were here really worked for that. But, I mean, the physical thing is, it's automatically sort of exclusionary to certain people who aren't interested in doing that activity. So I'm sure we can find an equivalent that, everyone could be suited.
Well, I think that what we use in general culture is just drinking coffee, right?
Yeah.
Or alcohol.
We use different kinds of conversations. But, just having that, some sort of physical medium or whatever, which makes, a coffee shop or something like it. What I think of with this conversation is Vigo Kanji. He has a design lab. Technically, he doesn't consider it art anymore. But it's this very sort of horizontal, a lateral way of people moving around, collaborating on some projects. There's sort of, a functional role to it, which is, designing products that people want to use or designing in public space or something. But at the same time, there's this sort of just hanging out, coming up with ideas, going to people that you think might be interested in just starting a conversation. It's a really completely non-structured, non-hierarchical place. So you can go there, if you get an internship, and hang out with Vito Kanji, who's legendary, and talk about designing forks or something for 2 months.
But this is the will to. This is what we've been trying to do, and as educators, as people that are doing this, we are trying to create these environments. But the problem it lies for us in the fact that there is a structure that I still hold a grade over you, or I still hold some kind of authority over you. Mm-hmm. And I think it has to come in part, and I put this on you guys. You're here to ask questions. And I'm looking at what a student's role is to ask questions and pursue. And it isn't to think that they know. The person that comes in this is a know-it-all at this stage is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm still asking questions. So if we're in earnest pursuit of something, if we're earnestly asking some kinds of a question, that doesn't mean we're having these answers, and it doesn't mean someone's got the answer for you. It just means that we're engaged.
Yeah. I think there's a certain abruptness to it on the part of the students, at least. And it's sort of what we were talking about later on the way down here with. I think we were talking about Issa and how she creates her own resources.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Where it's and this is the pursuit thing that Joe's talking about, sort of.
That's something that Aaron's mentioned to us before in Ireland. If you don't have the tools or the space for something, you have to figure out a way to make it bring something to it. So if you're not getting something from school, do something else for them.
Yeah, well, even once you graduate and you're not a teacher or technically a student anymore, that's why I came, because I don't want to stop having relationships with my teachers and my peers.
And by the way, that's when you don't get an honest critique.
What's
that? Once you leave, and you only have your friends, unless they're really good friends, it's difficult to create that environment to have a really good debate and a really good critique, because you're around friends all the time, and they're we love it. It's good. That's perfect. If you create that situation, you're in the right spot. You got to find a way to create those kinds of situations. Are you guys doing that? Are you willing to have those conversations? I'll tell you what. I'll take issue with a little bit of last night. There were a lot of people not committing to their work, not committing to I'm buying into my own work. There were a lot of hedging the bets, or whatever you want to call it. There was a lot of dancing. I saw a lot of dancers last night. And that's okay, because that was just show and tell, so it wasn't serious, but in the sense that, I stand behind that. That's what I made. I think that's Bruce, you were all over the last night. It drove you crazy, man.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, because at some point, you can be direct.
Yeah.
At least with your owning something. So, I'm just trying to figure out how to do this, you guys. You know what I'm saying? We're all self-conscious. You name an artist, and there's not one that's not at least somewhat self-conscious.
Well, part of it, too, when we talked about like getting together a critique group or something, mm-hmm. half the battle is just getting the mindset that you do it. You don't, you know, you plan whatever the hell you want to plan. Plan as much as you can, but you do it in the end, however far the planning stage gets. And that's the approach I took for this. It's like, I'm going to plan this thing out as much as I can, but I'm not going to let the fact that I didn't plan it quite as much as I wanted to, like, undermine it or let it go. It's like, so it's like, you do it. You want something, you do it. You don't, like, wonder how you can do it or think you need something crazy. I mean, that's how so many good galleries get started. That's how people make good work. Mm-hmm. That's how half the world, good little
it's
things get done.
It's not being intimidated by, like, you know, I mean, terrible metaphor, but like the blank canvas or like the blank piece of paper or whatever it is that you're working on.
Well, and it's also in your, in like being a student or an artist, it's also not saying, I need this tool and I can't do it if I don't have this tool, you know. Do something else then if you can't do that thing with this tool. Because you don't have this tool. Well, so what? Do something else.
That's something I find myself saying in class a lot, is like, in theory, we could get everybody a rabbit turd, mm-hmm. and the artist in this room would make something interesting
right.
out of it. You yeah. know, it's like, the tools.
Oh, I did. That's a great foundation. Foundation exercise. Everybody gets a rabbit turd. Get something good out of it.
Culture.
So,
from Milwaukee, you know, and seeing your listening, it sounds like a bunch of crazy stuff, right?
A little bit. You know, there's one thing that I would kind of say, you're talking about some sort of critique situation in which people were not standing with the work or saying.
Well,
there isn't hedging or bats, and I totally know what you're saying, but, you know. But sometimes I think that there's a way to actually not stand behind your work, but still like an honest, especially since we're in a critique, mm-hmm. we're in a school situation where you're safe to say whatever you really think. Mm-hmm. And what if you did something and you don't like it?
Are
you supposed to say that this is my piece and I stand behind it? What if you don't feel that you did a good job and you want to find out what you did wrong or how you did it wrong?
Behind it, though.
Yeah, I suppose, you know.
I mean,
Just an explanation is that they were doing show and tell, so it wasn't a actual critique. It's like, we said show 3 to 5 images of something you've done.
Yeah.
So, hopefully you have...
I'm just kind of wondering, like, I know he said he had a piece in there, and I don't really know, like, what some of his stuff is.
Yeah, but you know what I did? I said, don't critique then.
Right.
If you're not ready to put something up, put something behind you. Because at that point we're talking serious. If you're gonna stand there and tell me, it's kind of this. You already set up this defense mechanism, so I don't have to listen to you.
Well, what if I said, I put this up and I said, man, you know, I just don't know what this red here is. It's not doing it for me, and I can't figure out why.
So we're having a conversation.
My teacher,
that's
like,
that's
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then we're having a conversation. But you, I'll tell you what. Especially the professors in here, we know when people are dancing.
Sure. And I'm not talking about that. I understand what you're saying when you said that happened. And I just thought I'd bring up another kind of facet of.
No, that's dialogue. Right? That's what we want to do. Mm-hmm. That's what we want to do. We want someone to risk something. Right? I want someone to risk something.
Right. But come on, it's a little intimidating to be, you know, put into a situation like last night.
Yeah, right.
Where you're wondering, like, maybe my work's not good. And, you know, maybe this guy's really good. And, you know?
Well, that's why we have this big room full of artists. We're trying to be friends with each other so we can help each other all make better work, you know? So, it's definitely intimidating, but I think try and get over it as fast as you can, because you're gonna lose this opportunity to do that once you're done with school, and, you know.
And that's the people that have left school and know that you stand, you're in a wasteland after a while. Hopefully you develop that group of people. I'm hoping you guys develop this group of people.
But Chris, you're right. I was hard on it. You know, it's a little bit like, give it up, whatever. But I was just like, I just want people to stand behind what they do. And say, be confident. I just started wishy-washy. Just like, I'm doing this, and that's what I'm thinking about.
Well, it's not even so much confidence as like, you did it, and you know, it's admitting it and like saying what you did, being honest about it, standing up for it.
We'll definitely be here, you know.
Well, I mean, I can also imagine a situation, and I'm sure we could think of artists who do it where they don't stand behind their work as some kind of philosophical stance.
Right.
But then again, that's another way of, you know.
What do you mean by that?
Well, someone who like kind of, you know, you can kind of imagine someone who kind of is poking at the legitimacy of an art practice by making something that they don't believe in that is that legitimate. You know, being this kind of weird antithetical stance that they might take. That's a practice. Yeah.
It's funny, we're talking about abstract. You know, it's always this abstract. Mm-hmm. Is there anything concrete that you guys like want?
I have a question.
Yeah.
This is sort of like going back a little bit in the conversation, but I'm interested in ideas. I mean, earlier we were talking about how to force authority figures, like professors, into a role that's more personal, that aren't as willing as you all to maybe participate in a different kind of social interaction with students, like how to make that happen with people and like force them into that role, if you guys have any ideas. I mean, like having people over for dinner or something. I know that's a really simple one.
Give them
a
wet willy or something.
Like how, yeah. And then just like making them uncomfortable
Karen
enough
Rose,
to be.
Thinking.
Yeah,
sure. Oh my God.
Maybe I'll do that.
Holy shit.
To be personal, to because I don't like the separation between being in someone's home and then being at school with them.
Yeah.
And that how immediately that changes with some people. That makes me really uncomfortable.
Should we? I mean, the background of that discussion was we talked about like the fact that when we were in Ireland, we did this. I mean, part of my intention was to do this like experiment with the boundaries of teacher-student boundaries. And, you know, all of a sudden you start to become conscious of what those boundaries actually are because you kind of assume a lot of them. David, you were talking about this with me earlier, too. And so what do you do when you get back to the normal situation? Do you just kind of give up that ground that you've gained, or instead do you try to push into other people's and try to push back on those boundaries and try to get rid of some of that stuff?
Yeah, I would say that the problem with the student-teacher relationship sometimes in that case is that there's a taker and a giver, and usually the student is the just taking,
right.
taking. So it has to be something that there's got to be a mediated space where you're giving something back to me, which might be just questions, it might be like an engagement.
Yeah.
And it cannot be, it has to be a dialogue.
I agree, there has to be some kind of mutualism.
Yeah.
And that's what we have.
And you know what? You know what it was, I think, too, that really helped that situation, possibly? It's again the fact that I had a workspace there, and you guys could come back and come and see my studio. And so you could kind of, there was something about the fact that my work was there and you could comment on it too, even though there was that like, still that like, I'm going to grade you, there's still something about that I think helped make that boundary more fluid and a little less.
There was mutual vulnerability, which was really important.
I kind of wish that, like, being at Northwestern, I don't know how it is at other schools, but like, making alongside your teachers, but I don't know, like,
that,
I think you did that in the past.
I did that in the past, I tried that, and I had two results. One, some students were upset because they thought I should be spending more time with them. And two, I had too many copycat artists, and the was a major, this, decision to not show my work a lot to the students and say, and we made a conscious effort as faculty at our institution to make sure we didn't create mini classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is because most schools pull out, they pump out themselves. It's like little copy. But making, I think, Randy, for me, I think I want to get back in and make a little bit more. I think it's opened the space where I can. But for some reason, people thought that I was shorting them. If you're at a Cranbrook situation where you're in graduate school, it's expected. You know, teachers are making, they're artists, like MI school.
One in a lot of these different institutional settings, like engineering or any science, pretty much.
You're making.
You're making, and then you're making your teacher's work in a lot of ways. Or you're filling in the gaps of your teacher's work, things like that. Which is kind of what I wanted to ask you, is like, this model that you're describing in Ireland sounds really, really like the old Renaissance model.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah.
We talked about that when we were walking on the thing. I said, it sounds like they were talking about apprenticeship.
Well, but it's not like that, though, because we don't paint your paintings.
Right.
And that's the question, like, how is it different? Like, what are the differences? What are the similarities there? Like,
I was another layer, so I don't know.
Right, but what do you gain from seeing Aaron work?
Well, it's more closer to seeing each other, your peers work.
Well,
and, like, outside of school as well. Like, if he was making work, like, during a class time, like a designated time, then it would have been totally different.
Mm-hmm.
But it was at all hours. Like, we'd be there till like 3 in the morning watching him work or just, like, bothering him while he's trying to work.
Yeah, dude, you survived. That's a lot. That's energy. That's energy.
But what's the give and take there?
What'd you guys give them?
What
you were
saying with, like, mutual vulnerability.
Like, we were all exposed to each other on different levels. On a personal level, I mean, there are some teachers at MCAT that I would not feel comfortable being inebriated in front of. really aren't. And that seems like a very, like, simple and, like, unimportant thing and kind of embarrassing, but it's important if you're going to talk about certain things,
mm-hmm.
something like that, or like I gave you a haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's important. Like, I could have shaved your head, funny.
Mm-hmm.
But just, like, being able to really...
I never had that second mirror to look in the back, maybe.
It was
ADD.
What's the downside of this model, guys? You guys have transformative experience in Ireland. What's the downside? You don't live in Ireland?
Is it a lack of being able to reproduce that thing? Is that the downside? Is, like, you're living to this
you lost
moment?
Can
anyone
think of coming back? Well,
basically, like, everything that we had, it'll just never happen again. We're immersed in, like, totally.
You just have to do it.
Being in a foreign land.
Obviously, it's not going to be like.
Yeah, exactly like that. Like, everything about that is just
added
to it.
Just so you know, this is the most support group, the artist support group room now. It's never going to be this more supportive.
I have a question for you. Did you feel like that was a situation where, like, teaching and learning were happening on the same level? Like, we were all, like, doing that for each other?
In a way, you know, this is the thing that I thought we kind of accomplished. There's a cliche that a lot of artists say that... When most teachers say this, I think it's total bullshit. It's like, I learn as much from the students as I teach them. And I think in most cases, no, that's crap. Because in some, and I think, you know, them saying it is crap, but in some ways the Ireland thing, we were really getting close to that. Like, we were really kind of getting, I felt like I was getting a lot out of that thing. And it was a lot about, like, just having the casual conversation. You guys asking me questions about what I was doing and that kind of thing. And making, you know, not doing critique type of things, but commenting on what I was doing. And asking me questions about where the stuff was going and that kind of thing. And that was, in a way, really important. I just kind of thought, like, wow, why... Isn't it way smarter for me to take an in, to kind of follow someone younger than me than someone older than me. Like, you guys are the people who are going to be kind of, I don't know, are pushing or leading the way or whatever the hell you want. You're the kind of like people who are coming up. Why don't I want to be with that? Why do I want to be following the old people who are already, you know, are going to really soon be kind of past tense in a way, you know? I mean, that's a kind of a, you know, and maybe not the best way to think of it, but yeah, I think you can understand what I mean. I mean, it's like, wow, I should be getting your perspective, not someone up the ladder.
So are we getting their perspective, or are they just taking? I'm just listen.
No, they're given. No.
I want to get past Ireland.
I'm getting their.
You know.
No, I'm getting their perspective though. That's the point. Right. That's how I get.
Right.
That's how they're given to me.
It's a willingness and humbleness to show that you actually care about our opinions. I think that's where it begins. I think ethics with one of the wisest men I've ever encountered, ever in my entire life. But everyone mattered to him, and he made it known. He didn't have to say that. He didn't have to say it audibly, but the way he held himself, the way he responded to our questions and our statements, it was one of the best classes I've ever taken because of it. Because he humbled himself to listen to people who really knew nothing comparatively, and really, really thanked us for that, I think that he did get something from it. And it was a comfortable environment that created almost a friendship with him. And so I think it's really a responsibility of you guys as professors to show that you're willing and humble to listen and to care, and I think that you guys can learn from that.
Well, can we get that been there, done that mentality a little? Like,
oh, well, yeah.
Like,
you mean about
a young radical kid, but you know, I'm more mature and I've been like you. And,
well, yeah, because a lot of students, I mean, everybody's doing something that's in some way been done before, so yeah. But there are different ways and different levels of doing that, right?
But it's engagement.
Right.
It's engagement. So you as an artist are engaged, and I as a teacher or whatever, even as just a regular artist, as a person who wants to talk to you about something, if you're engaged in it, I spend a little more time with that, but then you're going to ask questions back. So it's like, it just can't be that. That's where I'm looking at. I'm looking for someone like super, like, okay, what's going on here? Because the rest of these people, the majority of people, aren't that interested. They're like playing this game, and then they move on.
Yeah, it's people who are looking into how they're repeating things and interested, like they're looking at the history and they already understand, or they want to know, like, what in the past, how am I kind of reworking these things?
Well, I don't think Michelle's here, but, you know, when I was looking at Michelle's work when I was in graduate school.
Right there.
Yeah. When I was looking at Michelle's work when I was in graduate school, which doesn't look anything like this, she was taking abstract painting and putting this feminist bent on it, and I said, there's something new. She's using a new language. And I'm looking at this person, and I don't know who she is, but I've learned quite a bit just by looking at this painting, thinking about how is this person not just making that same old painting, that painting that I expect to see. Oh, it's an abstract painting. Here it is. Oh, I expect to see it. Oh, here's how it works. Here's how it functions. Let's deconstruct this thing. She did something a little different. She was asking herself an interesting question. And so I said, okay, I have to pay attention. This is something worth paying attention to. So I think even in the conversation there, because I think we're getting that we need mutual respect for each other. We got to find a way to create dialogue. So where then, and I'm just going to move just a little bit, because, you know, in some cases we can, you know, unless somebody else wants to keep talking about this, it's just, it seems like, where do we find openings? And where are those openings to help the practice? You know, within work or within people or whatever.
I think this is where, like, the pursuit thing comes in for you. It's like, or when you talk about, like, you know, just, you can't wait around for people to do stuff and just have to do it, you know. That's where the openings are. Is like you create the openings. You're like, all right, Chris, I want you to come and go have coffee with me. And, you know, if you say no, you know, just no skin off my hide, and, you know, I do that several times, you know, with different people.
Is that what you're talking about, Joe, that kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
Well, it's like, are these things inside the institution or outside the institution?
because I feel like why like the Ireland thing was so successful is because you both were like being displaced to like a new area
yeah,
and you kind of leveling the playing field. So I think that's where you're going, where like you need to find, you know, outside of the classroom where it's not strictly student teacher, but rather colleagues, you know, like actually, and that's something that you will have to pursue to get your teachers to like step outside their teacher role.
I just don't want it to be just about, okay, so one thing that, I mean, I'm asking questions, you guys, I don't want to be a dandy, but a lot of the work is so personal to everybody, so personal, that they can't move beyond how personal it is to them. The fact that, you know, some of the work that I see is, you know, like, you know, some of the work I know is all personal. It's all personal to everybody. For the most part, you made it. So we get past some of that personal, me needing something from a human in this way, and just to ask a bigger question, ask an interesting question about art, how to pursue that, that kind of builds these dialogues, that builds a respect, that builds an interest. It's not this kind of like taking on and just taking and take. I'm just trying to like level this out too, because I think we're all needy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're all looking for a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to find a connection in this kind of rising way.
But this doesn't feel leveled out.
Now, right now, you mean?
With this conversation we're having, this feels more like a lecture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
So one of the questions here is open, I guess, is should we, as like the faculty, be expecting to get kind of what you're getting from Michelle in grad school?
Yeah,
should we put it completely new thing in reverse? We're looking to you guys for the new idea.
I think we'll put that very right. What was that?
That we're looking to that. Right. Okay. Just wanted to make sure that was stated.
I get energy when I see something exciting coming out.
But beyond energy, right. Like I think energy could be like this personal thing, right?
Yeah.
But it could also be an idea.
And I guess I don't know. I think there's probably a pretty vast array of opinions here as far as exactly what people want out of this. But for me, I'm not extremely interested in like pursuing or like trying to get this sort of egalitarian thing where I don't even like know you're a teacher anymore sort of mm-hmm. thing, because I don't think that's ever going to go away completely, just as like the student thing isn't going to go away completely. But I think that specific part of how it happens is sort of what you're talking about with this rising thing, maybe, or not? Because you're talking about the energy specifically with rising?
I'm right now I'm kind of stopped by Chris. And I'm trying to figure out what he wants. Like, what do you want from this conversation? In the sense that it's a lecture.
Well, I mean, we keep saying, like, what do you talk, you know? Like, and then we keep talking.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember, I don't talk a lot, you know? I like to talk to everybody here. But I remember back, you know, when I was in college, and, you know, I'd be the one that didn't say anything, and there were so many times that I would say things, and that maybe this is the time that those people who are not saying anything, but like everybody that's talking, like you, those people, the voice, you know. I mean, I think that's part of what I've always wanted with my students to be a part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And I think that's one way to level it out.
Can I add something to this? You're not having an agenda or a schedule, so I want to go back a little bit too, and I just think like I can't kind of relate in a way to this conversation, and I think your question about how do I force these people that don't want to give, fuck them. Fuck those people. Like, I think like this is our tribe. This is these are your people, and it's these people that are interested in this weird thing. This small group of us, considering the population of the world, you got to just. I kind of think it's like you just have to respect each other, and that for me, my best teachers never felt like I never even gave up much of a second thought. Like, I was a student; they were the teacher, you know. And then relationships developed and all that stuff. But when I think of it, when I'm doing my job, I mean, it's no different than I feel like, it's just like, there's some older artists, there's some younger artists out in the room, that's what we do. And it's not like, you know, and I for sure don't fucking want the responsibility of being the guy who knows, you know, everything. I haven't got a clue, less of a clue as time goes by about this activity and what I want out of it, you know? And so, I mean, and like you said, everyone kind of wants it, and that way, that's how I hear that, is that, you know, we really are, in some ways, we're the same. And we get involved in all this stuff, like somebody has to suck more and that, so I get to, for me to be better. Like, I can only be good in relation to your shittiness. You know? it's so destructive in our little group. We're already a tiny, you know, tribe. It's like, you know, I mean, and you know, you're not going to like every other person just going to call yourself an artist, but I mean, I kind of think, like, good artists can kind of feel each other psychically from, you know, 10 miles away, you know, and you kind of draw together. And I love this idea that, you know, we meet and have some crit group or something like that, but I don't know if any of you are like me. I hear fucking crit group and I am like, we're going the other way. Like, group, you know, and I feel like it's so organic that when we, you know, respect each other, then you find your people that you can understand.
But that's part of my just doing the thing that you need to do, where it's like, no, we're not going to wait until every damn person in this group has their schedule synced up. We're going to do it on this day, and whoever can make it, makes it, and whoever doesn't can come next time, you know?
Right.
And I think, well, I only just said, so I don't even bother with that. This is being referred.
Oh, you got me.
Question that was asked about the teacher's work, because we didn't really address that. I don't know, I just kind of want to hear about, like, what everyone's interested in. Because we didn't get last night. We didn't get.
She wants to know about her work.
I don't know.
You ready for this? What's your interest?
I was telling Joe today, I mean, that was an 8 months just like walking in there some days and thinking, this is the fucking coolest artwork on planet Earth on this planet. And then the very next day, like, wow, what a pretentious load of shit. This is terrible. So anyway, I've been there for like 8 months now, so I just thought, like, I have no clue.
too, is since our plans were so flexible, I'll put it politely, and went to hell, that, you know, originally I thought we'd all have the opportunity to either show or not show our work, and we haven't had that, you know, because I thought, oh, we'd each give a little spiel, and we could set the projector up and show images if you wanted to. But we didn't do that. And it's really, and again, to go further, like, I don't know, what would I say about my concerns? I always want to say it through what, I want to show you the thing and then talk about my concerns through that. Because otherwise, I don't know how to, where the hell would I start?
Yeah.
That's the problem. I mean, at least you, I mean, for me, you can at least go up and see that sculpture. You know, and I can, like, blab on for an hour and a half about that sculpture if you want me to.
What do you do if you have, like, an elevator speech? Like, you meet someone?
I don't.
Have an elevator speech. That's the answer. This is what we're about. Fuck elevator. No elevator speech ever. Fuck that. That's for businessmen. I don't know what that's for. That's for us, too. That's
speak my opinion. But man, do you think you believe in that? You think you gotta have an elevator speech?
No, you gotta know what you're doing.
You do, but
people
want you 4 hours to describe it.
People want that.
Yeah. Well,
Craig's yeah. always giving me shit about that.
Well, yeah. Yeah. No, please.
Well, this is very Minnesota. Sorry, it's very John's spot. Like, if you're in New York, you gotta, like, get your shit up.
Right.
Gotta,
right. Gotta sell, sell, sell. Sell. Make a sale, yeah. Talk them into it.
Bruce, you know,
what if y'all just do that as an exercise? Like, you guys ask us to do exercises. What if we just...
You're giving
us... Yeah. See how you guys navigate.
If you're really cool, I'll do a speech and say, listen, I got a story. And I'm telling you this story. And because of it, I'm going to tell you a story. It might be real simple. And I'm not going to tell you everything. And that was always the problem for me as a younger artist, trying to think that so you can know my work, you need to know all of my work to know any moment of my work. You needed to know where all the crap that I went through to get to that moment.
You're saying that you have to have that, or you?
No, I think we'll get this to get rid of.
Okay.
But most of us try to do that. Right.
I still feel compelled. I feel satisfied otherwise. Like, oh yeah, you know, come in here, but then yeah, but you should have seen what I'm doing before. Or, you know, like,
yeah.
How do you feel about artist statements then?
I never read them. I don't read them. I mean, I'll go to a show or didactics, and if I like the work and I'm interested and I'm compelled to read, then I'm happy to go read it. But
have you navigated something like the Quick and the Dead show then?
Oh, that one, you know, that seemed like reading was a component. But reading not like for me, and that one like justification, I didn't feel like justification.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
I agree.
It's very different.
They definitely weren't like artists. Statements.
Yeah,
why
don't
you
read those?
This is what I'm about.
Yeah. I mean, our statements are, I feel like they're, half the time, they're obsolete by the time the ink dries. You know?
Press Apple PFAS now, can you? So change my mind!
I mean, if I could. No, that's our job. I mean, I'm not saying be a willful hillbilly or something. I don't want to read, but that all that stuff's tricky. And I'm not, I mean, I think if like we were that good of writers, I definitely feel this for myself. If I was that good of writer, I'd write. You know, I'm not. I got this other language that makes sense to me. It comes through my eyes and into my brain that way, and that's what makes sense to me. And when I start to write about it, that doesn't work for me.
So
I think it's an individual thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Yeah,
I'm not saying. I'm just going back to kind of what we were talking about, you guys needing your art and talking about your art. Just a question, supposed to all. Do you think that you can't have, minus the elevator speech, do you think you can have a conversation? Because we're all about conversation. We all want to enter into conversation. Can you have a conversation without seeing the art? Because that's what we're asking you to do, right? We're asking you to start a conversation with us, tell us about something, without seeing anything.
Yeah, I'm not even...
So is that possible?
It's really hard.
With anyone?
It's something after you guys fail, too.
He still wants to go with some assignment.
If you guys are asking us what we want to do, and then we ask something, and then it doesn't happen, we'll see.
Yeah.
So what is it you want?
I'm not terribly concerned that you guys even talk about your artistic practice necessarily. I just want to know if you're interested in.
Yeah.
For me, like, philosophically last night, and you know, maybe you didn't quite understand it because it didn't really make that much sense, but the sort of indirectness I was talking to is less about the way people were presenting their work to me than it was about the way we've all sort of learned, just by look at what we made, you know, and look at what people made even 20 years ago. And that's what I was thinking about, that, and, you know, like the... Not even the flavor of the day or something like that, but we can't escape the sort of menu that we're given of, you know, options, ways to rebel, ways to, you know, we even talked about that earlier today and some of that stuff, you know? And so when I was saying, like, I was kind of wondering, it's a sort of an aesthetic mode that I'm interested in. And we all kind of, I mean, everyone I know who practices it, some these objects that we keep on, you know, breaking down, doing less, looking, you know. And I think that's interesting. And maybe, and that's an idea that is, you know, that's just one of the things that I think many people, but something that I wrestle with, and that, you know, it's not an explanation of what I'm making now, but this thinking about, like, how, if you enjoy a kind of newness, I do, and then how do you participate in that newness without absorbing another set of rules that's been handed to you, or it's cultural, or it's popular, or whatever it is, you know? I mean, like, how do you find, I think that's interesting, to wonder how you find some sort of authenticity. And, you know, you were talking, I was listening to you, and this might not be true, but it was a sense I had last night. So you show a couple slides, and you have that painting and the exploding atomic bomb building painting. Oh, is that yours?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so obviously you can render and so on and so forth, you know? And I think, like, how we almost get talked out of, in our modernness, our contemporariness, we get talked into thinking of our skills in this tainted sort of way. And I'm not trying to be reactionary, like, oh, we should paint guys with lutes and tights and stuff, you know. It's like I couldn't, if I, the ways, I feel like it's kind of prescribed, or, you know, it's contained, or whatever, you know. Our choices, we think we're so wide, it's wide open, I can, you know, throw this and that, but it's kind of, and I'm including myself, but it's kind of, that's what I've been thinking about a lot. Like, how are we all stuck together, you know, with this big gummy wad? And it's like you either some kind of reactionary knucklehead nobody wants to listen to anyway, me either, is like defending the proper territory of what's good art, or you get sucked into this mishmash of, you just can't be outside of your time. And sometimes I wonder if the good artwork is outside of all these tastes we've inherited, or, you know, at some subconscious level or something like that. I wonder about that a lot.
And where is that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't see that. Like, I don't...
What's the that you're talking about? This, like,
didn't you just say, like, maybe the good art is outside of all this?
I wonder outside of, like... I don't know, I'm not trying to be too much of a hippie, but outside of our, like, conscious understanding of this, like, we have to study all this stuff, and I think it's super important as artists, you have to be knowledgeable and, you know, understand your field, otherwise you're dumb too. You know, you don't do that. Boat salesmen know the, you know, what's in the engine of the boat they're trying to sell. We should know our field at least that well, you know. But so I'm not saying be dumb about it, but I kind of wonder about, that's what I've been wondering about a lot lately, that personally, that's what my, is like how much we filter in and how much it restricts. If I want to paint little ponies and I'm really good at it and it really makes me happy and I think they rule, and but if I'm halfway smart, I think it's like, oh, no, that's not going to work unless it's ironic or blah, 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 or something like that. I can't paint a horse nowadays. It can't be a good picture. You know what I mean? It's like, and then we get kind of like almost, I feel like, and I do too, and, you know, we get kind of almost ashamed of our skills. And that's and I was thinking, like, that's a school thing, too. Like, back when you were talking about skills and the guilds, so on and so forth, earlier today. And, you know, then those skills ruled. They judged everything by that one set, which just wasn't good enough. But now we almost...
It's the opposite.
It's the opposite, you know? Like, if I don't have, like, a little eyelash on the thing there, I'm like, yeah, fuck you, that's it, look at it, enjoy it. Take that home, think about it. You know, if I make something like, you know, like, what? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
We seriously have, like, three different, like, there's a lot of different practices in this room.
Oh, yeah.
And you go upstairs and you see a very, you know, deconstructed, you know, a lot of installation. We're all kind of, we saw a lot of that issue, too. It's in my work. It's in your work, Lou. It's in your work, you know, this kind of deconstructed look. I mean, is that interesting to you guys? I mean, is that what? Is that the model? Is that what we're modeling now? You guys like that, too? No, just this kind of, this is all about your work, Brock. You know, like there's this random stuff that you put on the wall, and you gotta deal with it, and I gotta deal with it because you put it out for me to deal with.
That's a good
and
example.
Right?
And so did everybody look at it now that it's dark?
What?
That spray paint on the wall in there?
Oh no! We're looking at his work from yesterday. He's like a cardboard box square that's like packaged to be thrown out.
Yeah, I like that, dude. That's what I think. Like, I like that work. That rang a bell. Yeah, I was like, cool. Like that. You did the poster cut in half. But then I think like, you know, like I wonder if I lived on a desert island, if I ever thought like that. Fucking that's rocks. That poster I found on that. You know. Sometimes I think, I noticed it happened in my head. I used to do a lot of copying, you know? And I noticed that sometimes my criteria would be like, oh, dude, that's too fucking hard to copy. Where are we now that's like, you know, like, oh, that's too hard for me to just trace. I can't do that.
that's what, you know, scanners are.
So the question is, what is the question about? Do we like what?
Well, I was just talking about this. Oh yeah, right. I was just talking about this fragmented note thing that we're looking at, and I think what Bruce is talking about is don't be ashamed of your mastery, or not mastery, but craft and skill.
Right.
And I think I'm looking at, you know, I think about Chris's work, and it's really well crafted.
Yes.
And so there's still a place for that on one level, or is there not a place for it? Are we done?
That's not all it does.
No, of course not. But that's part. But it's essential to some of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, in my case, it might be the opposite.
Yeah, who were you telling me? We were talking about Mark Manders.
Sure, right.
And you're saying talk about those chairs.
I didn't realize. Did anyone see this lecture at the University of Minnesota? This is one of the Mark Manders had a lecture at the University of Minnesota. None of these people saw it. A couple of people have. I know. It was surprising that a chair that looked like it was a store-bought chair, like some kind of rummage sale chair, he had to go make it.
Why do you think he had to go make it?
He
what the hell?
He had to make it, right, Chris? I mean, like, that guy had to make that work.
Do you think that's, like, residual guilt that doing this job? No, seriously. Like,
I think it was psychosis. I think it was a psychosis, but I think he had to make it. And he made it so, like, the other work is clay bodies without arms and it looks like wet clay. I always believed it was wet clay. And I was disappointed to find out that they weren't just this temporary object, but these things are real hardcore sculpture. But he still made them in a temporary way. Like, they still needed to feel like they could fall apart. And that's a strange thing to be doing.
What was the purpose of him making the manufacture?
A lot of these chairs that he makes are reduced to 88%. That's right.
Oh.
Super small. That's right. Yeah.
So when you see it, noticeably smaller.
Yeah. That part of his chair is weird. It feels like
it's barely noticeable.
Yeah. That chair reduced to 88%.
Okay.
It's weird.
So specifically 88%.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Man, I do feel. I mean, sometimes I do feel like I'm old-fashioned, you know, with the way I work and the way I produce things and. I love to build things, and I love to make things look nice in the video. The films in the video I make are really high production costs, and I spend a year and a half making these things. And then I go to, like, Unmonumental show in New York, and it's just, I don't look like anything. It looks, you know, it's the trashy look, and it's like, I didn't get it until I went to that show, and I saw a whole room full of trash, you know. But, I don't know. I mean, I do feel old-fashioned sometimes, and I feel like I like this last body work. I wanted to make something really, really beautiful, and so I made these really beautiful photographs. And I thought, well, it's a beautiful film, you know? And so, I don't know. But I've learned that it's just like it makes a lot of different things to make this weird art world go around. You know, that's why I love teaching. It's just like I love, you know, that's why I wanted to do a collaboration today with Matthew.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, I was intrigued by what he did at the Valley Fair with these characters, and I could, you know, let's do something. Do you think it's like a pendulum, though? You just keep making your work.
I don't see like okay, I'm going to keep doing this, it's going to swing back and
sure.
Be popular in 2020.
Right.
I just do what
just I do. Yeah.
I love doing it. I actually love making these things. Thank you.
said that too. You said that to me on the first day that we met. Like, I love what I do. This is like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great to actually hear teachers, or like see teachers that really love art. Like, you know, some days I really don't like art, or I don't want to talk about art. But it's like, you know, people that are constantly talking about art, or it's great to hear.
I sort of, when we were, the three of us on the ride down here, we were talking about music, and you were like, well, what was your first love? And I totally didn't understand your question, so like, I just stared at you blankly for like a whole minute. And I was like, you mean music? And you're like, yeah. And I was like, fuck. I don't know. That would have never ever crossed my mind. And I know it was like sort of a simple gesture or whatever, but that's when I realized that we don't think about art the same way at all. But and I learned something from it, so that was really good. That was blabbering, so I apologize.
Did you guys really feel a big wall between yourselves and your professors? I mean, you guys in particular. Do you really feel that? Mm-hmm. Based on you're talking about, like, a big separation, you really... I'd be surprised.
My personal perspective, like, especially with Joe and Luke, like I think of Joe as I come at it from a totally different perspective. I think of... actually used him in a really direct way, and that I look at it like Joe has something to offer me. He has experience, he has knowledge of how to navigate a very confusing sort of system, he knows people, and I'm going to sort of exploit that while I can. And Luke offers something more specific to sort of my age group, and I'm going to exploit him for all that it's worth when I can. And they're so available. Like, and this is just speaking from my perspective at my institution, that I can engage them as friends, but still understand a clear boundary. But I think I've pursued my relationship with them from the perspective of I want what they have. I don't want to make their work, but I want what they have. So I come from sort of a background of education that says, if you want what someone has, then you look at what they did to get that. And if what they did to get that was follow A through Z, then I listen to what they say. Yeah. And I sort of navigate A to Z, and they offer very solid guidance with that. And I don't know what they did to model that, but it's sort of like it's like an AA model. It's like a sponsorship to sponsee model, where they're not some fantastic superstar. They're just a dude who's navigating space and has done what I've done.
Yeah.
You know, and I can go to them for guidance. I think that's maybe what it's supposed to be. You know, apprenticeship, that was what it's supposed to be. It's some dude who's already navigated the space, and you can sort of just see what they did and then make your own road from there.
And sometimes I think, especially if the example is somebody who, like you said, they've been a superstar or something like that, and but they've been pursuing it for this consistently for such a long time. I always found that a really important model for me when I was a younger artist, to just sort of see that. You know, it sort of shows you that it's possible, and yeah, not how to necessarily, or a specific way how to, but it just, you know, there's something to that. You know, you could pursue this lifestyle, this interest, and be relatively happy and sane, and have done it for a long time. You know, I think that's a nice model for people. If it's about the long haul, you know, that you want to be an artist for life, seems like a pretty good thing. You know, spending time doing to me. I forget your name. Sorry, in the corner, you just talked to earlier. Yeah,
Micah.
But you were saying that thing about the professor that you really appreciated, and that way that he had of making you feel not, you know, equal, worthy, human, or something.
Yeah.
That's what I meant when I was being a little idiotic when I was saying that about your other people. You know, is that's one of those people that you would like, just a human to human, regardless of what they did. You know, that's a model human, the way they left you feeling, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like my standard.
Yeah.
A lot of truth.
And I think, you know, when you're looking for professors, and you can still get things from people that don't want to have that kind of openness. But you know, if you want the thing that you're talking about, you know, which is a more equality among artists and a give and take.
Bruce, I'll tell you this. I mean,
certain people maybe.
I'm not a warm and fuzzy. You know what I'm saying?
You're not.
No. And I could play that role really well, but the fact that I would, and even on this trip, if you think about it, we got a small introduction to everybody. And if we're going to take the time to invest in your idea, you know, in the sense that I'm really thinking about it, you know, it's not like we're just being nice, you know, but we don't have to do that. But we're really thinking about what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
That should not be dismissed. No. It's just, oh, they weren't warm and fuzzy.
No, but that's love, Joe. I think you might not be warm and fuzzy, but you're... You're romantic.
You are romantic. Because that's our passion. That's our passion. And that is the human to human thing.
Yes,
and I hope that people recognize that in a sense that don't just look for Papa or whatever. Don't look for, you know, this other thing.
Right.
You're looking for that kind of collegial thing. Because I'm going to get something if I'm really bad luck. Like I think that's where Aaron, you know, it's like, Aaron, what are you getting? You're in dialogue. Mm. And so by in being in dialogue, there is that shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something specific. Because I was asking, what do you get? You know, you're getting that. So.
Well, and the students are in the same boat. You know, they don't have to be here either.
That's right.
And
I mean, that's what Randy's asking for us to talk about our work so she can engage. You know what I mean? Right on.
Well, it'll be nice to you so later when you're famous, you know, it's up.
that's what I'm always looking for, man.
I really enjoyed what you said about how that's love about challenging people or being like, you know, kind of harsh almost. I feel like in my head that's what I want to do too to like everybody else, or I want that from everybody else too. I want to do that simultaneously, but it's like for me, it's how do I get past my emotions? Or like,
yeah.
That's what I'm struggling with.
And I don't want to do that all the time.
Get past your emotions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not
interested in
that.
What's the percentage in that? Why? What's wrong with them?
Yeah.
No, I don't think anything wrong with that. But I think what he's saying is that my experience has been sometimes you detach a little bit so you can have perspective so that you don't make it about the person. My biggest issue in awe has always been in critiques, is that I'm not critiquing you as a person.
Yeah.
That
right.
If I start doing that, we're now no longer in critique. We have moved past critique, and we're in therapy, or we're in some really bad situation
mm-hmm.
where we can still respect each other, but I have to give you respect by not critiquing you as a person. And so that's where emotions can get in the way and can get dangerous in that sense. And that's just but it's not dangerous to have them. And it's not dangerous to you know, let them come out. You just have to, we both have to know how we're sharing to be complicit in that. Does that make sense?
That does mean a little bit. Like, especially in regard to some exchange about art.
Yeah.
That makes some sense. That I would treat you, like that might be that act of love, where I really treat you like an equal and say, I believe you seriously want to talk about your work, and I believe you so much, I'm, let's go, I'm ready to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But this doesn't mean you can't get really depressed when you have.
That's right.
No.
That's right. Oh, and by the way, just on your side, because I know, you know, the taping stuff. I taped one of my critiques at grad school, and I listened to that thing over and over and over for about 2 weeks. My wife was so worried, because I got shredded for 3 hours. Like, shredded for 3 hours. And I was, why are you doing that to yourself? Why would you ever do that to yourself? Right? So, it's just an opinion. And you move on. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm curious about this, though, because I think there are situations, like we were talking earlier about Kinji, like, riding someone. Like, he, most of the faculty have met Kinji Akagawa.
But just for the state of reference, Kinji is all about the love thing, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's...
And he's a MCAD teacher, just kind of retired. And he's the one of these guys who, and this is where I think you can sometimes, I mean, critique, you're right, I think you're absolutely right, and I agree with you maybe more than you, in that the critique is about the work and not the person.
Yeah.
But there is a time where I have to get in someone's face.
Okay.
Like Kenji is perfect at it. He'll tell people in the nicest way and the most clear way possible, change your ways. You know, you need to straighten up and fly right because you're screwing stuff up and you got a bad attitude. He'll say it like really nice, but you're not going to leave the room wondering what he just told you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what he just told you. You know, and sometimes that has to happen.
And when he says it to you...
And sometimes maybe the students have to do that to the teacher, but that's hard.
And when he says it to you, though, you listen to it because
mm-hmm.
he has a track record.
Mm-hmm.
And he is a sincere guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody like him says something like that to me, it means something.
Mm-hmm.
When I don't know somebody and
yeah.
they do something like that, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's where it's like kind of like, where does the, like... Where is the emotional thing really important?
Well, Joe, you do it, and
sure.
I've done this to people, too. Now, the other way around, too, is like, look, you're doing good work. You don't
yeah.
need to worry and fret
sure.
and like, get all insecure. You're going to do, you know, you're going to do that, but just know that you're doing a good job.
Sure.
You know, you have to do that, too.
Hmm.
And I think I've probably gotten that from students, too. Because I ask about teaching and, you know, what things work and what don't, and sometimes people just come out and say, look, you're, you know, this is working out. You know, you don't have to worry so much about it.
You want them to work out for everybody, though. Sometimes don't yet. It's kind of like the catch-22. It's like, you know, 18 people got it and 2 people are utterly blown out of the water. And it's like, damn.
Oh yeah.
I was wondering, if the teachers, if you were stable enough, like to make like $200,000 a year after I don't ever, would you still be teachers? And like, why is teaching important in your life?
Do you think Luke?
I can almost, you know, directly take words from Aaron's mouth as far as like why it's a great thing, which is that you have a constant conversation. It's instantly there. It's engaging. It keeps you thinking. And I guess to use somebody else's term, it keeps you humble too. You know, it keeps you when you can learn something from a student. It is that constant reminder that there's not a sort of qualitative difference.
And yeah, and I kind of, to me, I'd give you different answers. I have given you maybe different answers at different times because sometimes teaching can be really frustrating. Like I've had plenty of classes where it's like there's one person in that class that's like doing something interesting and cares, and the rest of them that's really hard to deal with. You know, you have 8 people in a class or 10 people in a class, and one person's doing really great work. And one person's doing okay, pretty good work, and the rest of them are just like dead weight, you know. And that's when teaching gets tough. But I don't know. I mean, I feel like when I get to be a better teacher, I want to teach more, in a weird sort of way, because then I know how to negotiate that. You know, I know how to be interested in the interesting people, when to try to get people who don't seem as engaged, and when to cut my losses and say, look, I can only do so much for you, you know? I can only do so much for someone. You got to do interesting things. I can't do them for you. You know, that's the other lesson. And I was thinking about it today, or not this weekend, the opposite way. Like, I always try to tell people, and I know that there are, like students, you're always going to have these classes that are painful. Like, they suck. But always make it a challenge to try, how can like you engage to make the class better. And if you take that attitude, you're going to move everything up better. I mean, there are still going to be classes that are kind of lost causes, but there are going to be fewer of them, and they're not going to be as lost a cause. But then I was thinking the reverse. Like, if you have students that are lost causes, what can you do to kind of make that situation better, too? Like you guys are all here because you're the people we like to teach. Mm-hmm. But there, you know some of your colleagues that are like, they just don't seem to give a fuck about anything. You know, and you just can't get them engaged. But then there are people too that you can kind of like, maybe if I work a little, maybe if I have a different attitude, and maybe if I think about things differently, maybe I can pull them into the more engaged thing. So you kind of have to, I don't know, I feel like I always have to turn those kind of critiques around too on myself.
I would say, I mean, if like one of the questions was totally if I got paid up $200,000, I quit instantly. Mm-hmm. I quit instantly. And I mean, just because who wants to work? And it's a great job. And I mean, I got into graduate school in like 1983. And until 10 years ago, I just did grunt work, pick up labor, museum monkey, you know, like every cruddy job that you could think of, and that's how I made my living. It was kind of iffy. And so I'm super grateful for my job. I love art school, and I love being an art student, and I love them still. I think it's like the greatest environment. So I love that job, but if someone paid me $200,000, I would stay home and work, you know. I would miss that. I could use some structure in my life. Going there today is going to be interesting. It's good for me, probably, but be a uniform or otherwise. I miss it. It's a cool job. I've driven home some days and just said loud thank yous in my head for having it. You know? Chris was saying today, too, you know, that they're hard to come by, and they are hard to come by, too. You know, I mean, it's circumstance, and you fall into it, something opens up in you later, whatever, and you've been making good work and trying really hard. But it could take a long time.
Yeah, I don't know how I'd... You too, it's like... I was hedging the question, and I was implying that I wouldn't quit. And I kind of think I wouldn't. I probably wouldn't do it full time, which I'm not now anyway. And I'd probably do it, but who the hell knows?
Yeah.
But I do know people who, like, have literally not... They don't have to teach, because they're making oodles of money on their work, but they just still teach.
I think also to that question is... Some of us have never had the opportunity just to be a full-time artist.
And
I think that given the chance to be a full-time artist for just a portion of my life would be, I would love to know what that feels like. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I can answer the question this way. I gave Luke one of my classes, and sometimes it's hard because I don't get the same engagement that I used to get. And so, like, I miss that. But I know that that was the right decision. That he needed that class, and he was better for it than I was. So, like, you miss
sometimes
things.
Sometimes you almost take it back.
Sometimes I try.
well, there's
I
that.
I can't help myself.
That's, right? I want to teach that class.
I love that class, but he's better than I am. Not sculpture. He's not better than I am. Aesthetics.
Yeah.
What about you? What do you think?
I got $200,000. I think, you know, I'd really, really love what's I love teaching, and I think, especially after this weekend, I think I could be a much better teacher, and I'd like to work on that. And but I think I'd take some of that money and try to buy my way out of the political
bullshit.
Because I would rather just show up and
teach.
Right. To go back to my studio.
Yeah. Well, that's something that's kind of interesting, because I was thinking the same way, like, get rid of the kind of school crap,
yeah.
And it kind of
do this.
Yeah, but I also said, Joe, you said being a full-time artist would be such a great opportunity, and you know what? I hate to keep bringing Ireland up. No, I don't. but I felt like I, for the first time in my life, was a full-time artist. But I was also teaching.
Yeah.
And that was the great thing about it.
Yeah, but I mean, being engaged in being displaced, like Hannah was talking about, is you were still were not navigating the, I was trying to get a gallery, I was trying to, I mean,
right,
there's so much that goes
on,
there's so much that goes on with being a full-time artist, that you can, that's the dream. You were living the dream, and by the way, I think it was, it always feels like to me, like, you went back to grad school.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And that's like you're teaching and interacting.
I was a fake grad student.
And that's what grad school should be about, right? Yeah. So in some ways, you went to that heaven spot again,
right,
that sweet spot, right? Go back to grad school.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of funny to light on that.
Chris's turn. Talk.
Oh, Chris's turn.
I'm just really glad Joe doesn't have a flashlight
right now. Yeah.
There's
still energy in here.
Yeah.
It's
just
the
light. Yeah,
the light. It
burns out, yeah.
I don't know, is this helpful to anyone? I mean, maybe Chris was still not being democratic here, I don't know. But when, you know, do you guys have questions for us? Besides that, wants to talk about our work? I'll get my laptop in a second if you want.
Yeah, I guess my question would be, when, because you brought up the democratic and like there's this thing where maybe the student types should be talking more, or maybe you should just be grilling us more. I don't know what's the right. Yeah, what do you want? You know, do you want to talk more, or do you want to like answer my damn question?
Right.
Maybe
that
everyone's asking satisfied.
I hardly.
I'm kind of on the boat with Bruce. It's like, if people aren't talking, it's their fault. So I don't know. I'm not losing any sleep about other people talking.
Well,
I thought
it was
closer.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree with that.
Some people, it's not a danger for some people to talk about it.
I know.
Yeah,
so I
have to sleep over that all, every day.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I'm really glad when they do talk. So I'm not. All I'm saying is.
You can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
But give them the opportunity.
Yeah.
Give them the opportunity. Shut up. You know.
Yeah.
that gives them the opportunity. So I mean, the same goes for me. I'm just saying that sometimes the gregarious. I struggle with that a lot. You know. Like you just overpower, and sometimes it's okay to just be silent for 30 to 45 seconds. And
you still talking?
But I'll just keep going on. Let me talk more about that.
I was just thinking of this thing called intellectual escapism. Because we've been sitting here talking and there's a tree outside or something like that. I mean, I know that's kind of silly. I don't know. That's just a thought I just had. Like, there's trees and there's, like, doors and I don't know, like, how do we incorporate those things, like, that are around us that aren't in us or, like, that are outside of us? Like, how do we incorporate that into the conversation? Because I remember one time we had a critique at school and a guy got... a guy came and sat with our group that was having a critique, and he was on drugs maybe or something. I'm not even sure what he was, but the police came or the security cops came. But we like kept talking about like theory, and we totally ignored what was going on. And there's something really strange about that we can just be totally out of our surroundings and be in our heads. And I wonder what people think of that.
That's like those genius guys that like walk around with a load of poo in their pants.
Eloquently said, Mr. Coppola.
Thank you. The professor speaks. Well, I always keep that in mind. You guys, yeah, there's a whole thing that, you know, paints like a teacher, you know. I always keep that in mind. It's a warning, you know. Careful.
I haven't heard that one.
Really? I haven't heard that. I think it's the hardest. It's
We're going to have a conversation about that soon.
I mean, you know, that's funny. That's a great little story about, you know, a guy getting arrested and you decided to quit. It's pretty good. Good.
Is that a question also that it's like, what justifies you making your artist being important also? Like, how can you justify making your art when there could be many other more important things you could be doing with that?
Or is it more about...
Like, how do you guys justify making your art?
I don't believe, for me either, I mean, there's nothing more. I mean, I feel like if I could, you know, this is the thing that I'm best at, and I feel like I don't doubt the validity of not my byproduct, but that attempt at a contribution to be part of art, you know, art culture. I feel like that is it's a good in and of itself, I think, as an activity, maybe even outside the marketplace, so you have to think about how.
But first, I think that's the only frustration, and we've talked this weekend. If no one gets to see it.
Yeah, I want people to see it for sure.
Because I don't think there's I don't know what justification you need. But you want people to engage in it, just like you guys want us to engage in you and your work. You know what I mean? Like, I make things.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time alone in my studio.
Yeah.
And I see most of it, and no one else does. You guys have what an amazing thing that school is.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you can piss it away if you want. We know that because we've gone through it, and we know that how hard it is. I mean, keep on saying it. How hard it is to get a good conversation. Mm-hmm. I've known Chris's work since 1990, and we really had a first conversation this weekend. And that should tell you something about how fleeting it is. And how stupid it can be, and how much you can waste time.
Do you have a sense that there is like a choice between not that I would say like, you know, doing things that if I could be a doctor without borders or something, I would probably put that above my fiddling around in my garage. But I can't do that. But the sense that it's like a really wrong space between, you know, maybe something more altruistic and the thing that you engage in.
Well, I don't know, like, does that really do anything?
You guess you're not a believer.
Time, well, I think it does. It engages with the ideas and the world, and I think in that way.
What does it engage with?
I don't think you would have brought George Bush up to Washington.
That's right.
What is the engagement? I mean, like,
even
putting the guard for us, though, is a question.
You know what? That's a great question. I think you make it really, in a way, a whole lot for yourself.
Well, for people, it can be for a really small group of people.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be for an audience.
Yeah.
But it might be a really small audience. Yeah. But I don't think, I mean, Chris, you and I were talking about this on the walk, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about that idea of how art changes mm-hmm. or engages with life.
The ripple.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It ripples. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get a big audience when you're an artist. If you want to be a movie director, then you can have a big audience. But not as an artist.
You also don't get to decide who your audience is or how, you know, how it's received or what
as an
it
artist?
Is when it gets out there.
As an artist?
I think you completely lose control of the first time anybody else sees it.
Well, in some ways, yeah, but in some ways, no. I mean, in some ways, the art audience is all too predictable, right? But in other ways, I think, yeah, once you kind of give it up and the work starts to not be your own again, right? Or it starts to not be your own because people are having conversations about it and the work changes because conversations are going in different directions about it. If people are looking at it and talking or writing about it.
In some ways, to me, it's like the work doesn't even exist. It, like, it sits there and flickers, and then, you know, any 10 people that come by, I don't know if it's true to complete it, but I mean, it's a different work is really what I'd rather say. It's a different work to every one of those 10 people. It's not static as this thing in space, you know. Mm-hmm. It occupies a certain amount of space, you know. It's not the same object from the
Allen talked about that.
Yeah.
People asked him why, you know, he said, well, I have this thing and I'm looking at it and I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
And because I think it's interesting, someone else might think it's interesting.
Someone else will think it's interesting. Yeah. You know, you're not the only, you know, you're not, that's the idea of you're not some original person.
That's right.
Right? If I'm thinking about it, someone else is thinking about it.
Yeah.
When Brocky said something, I mean, you're the one asking good questions, because I've asked some good questions. But you asked me to go see your piece. If it didn't matter, you wouldn't have asked me. You know, because you were trying to share something. At least you were looking for some kind of comment or something. I'm not sure I gave you anything, but I did go see it.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully that's enough. Is that partly just social dynamics, the fact that if you're passionate about something, passion goes off?
I believe that.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, everyone's looking for someone and something to be passionate about, and some are those who don't have passions, and some are those who do have passions, and some are those who just, I mean, the ones who don't, you just follow the ones who do.
Yeah. And you can kind of expose that passion, and other passionate people may notice it, and, you know, it's not a fixed gift, but it's definitely, it acts like a gift, I mean, I think, you know.
Also, I think part of it, culturally, in terms of like more altruistic professions, is I think the downsides of those professions are less obvious to see. That's more of the ripple thing for them, whereas like the benefit for us is more of the ripple thing, so it's less obvious to like see the reciprocation of the benefit from that. Does that make any sense? No, that's pretty vague.
It was sort of a story along those lines where I met one of those people who's technically a sociologist who went to Africa, I think Peace Corps, spent years there helping people who were really, you know, like on that, like making less than $1 a day, relying on aid to survive, that kind of crowd. And the reason like I ended up meeting her is because she was really, really interested in art after being in Africa, because these people that were starving or right on the edge of it. She used one family in particular that didn't have, they had one bed for a family of like six or something like that. They had dirt floor, they had no chairs, they had a table, but they had a vase. It was a ceramic vase. And they were absolutely in love with the vase, and they like, needed that there. So, like, you know, like, you're talking about bare necessities of life, or, you know, there's this thing there in that aesthetic experience. That seems to be really, really fun and seems to be something that people can understand or grasp, even if they're among that set that theoretically needs something, like needs doctors and like people need survival. Maybe they still need that, or they need something like that. So that's like, I guess, doesn't really directly relate to what we do at all, but there is still in some way that kind of universal or is a
along those lines, I mean, it was cool. I went to Berlin, and there was a monument to the 20th anniversary of the wall coming down, and there was this article about how like the secret police was huge in the art world in East Berlin, because they found that art was really, really a threat to them. And for me, that made like, believe me, believe in it so much more, that like they were like, the government was really scared of the artists, you know, like that they could like get the people to get behind them and they could do some damage to like some obvious oppression that was going on. So that was pretty cool.
A friend of mine was giving a talk up in St. Cloud, a visiting artist that had come up there with Jay Schmidt, and he gave this talk afterwards. I thought it was really moving. I mean, it didn't try that hard to do, but he said that students at the dance theater line was doing what they were basically, you know, and he described art for him as the last free space. You know, I think of it in that way, and that's why art, you know, always is a threat to some totalitarian groups or whatever, because it's not even, I think it's not even based on a threatening object. It's just the idea of that kind of intellectual freedom to, you know, call an eyelash a sculpture or something like that. That is definitely threatening to the order and logic of things, you know.
have really long eyelashes.
Oh, my word. I've been working on eyelashes for 5 years. Do what I want.
What if YouTube becomes the last free space?
Oh, that's
I'll
sad.
I'll fucking kill myself. Not before I take you fuckers with me.
You're that kind of psychopath, huh?
Wonder about those guys. I was like, yeah, you got something right. Shoot yourself, but you know, I didn't take your wife with you. It was a half right equation.
I like you too. Find so much weird shit on there. Sometimes it's like a really amazing research tool too.
Oh, I think we should share it. Let's share our favorite YouTube.
Oh,
you have no idea.
Yeah,
weird.
Yeah.
Anyone watch South Korean gaming deaths?
Oh,
check that out. Played games till they died in marathon. Like
no.
You know, they shoot horses. I'm just saying. It's out there. There's some fucking stuff on there. Well, how about this dude that just, like, I mean, talk about, yeah, like, you know, like a portal to communications. Let's all communicate with our blogs and the other. You know, this dude that just went freaked out and killed all those people in that health club, you know, he had his blog and he described all the shit he was gonna do, but no one was reading his blog. Him, you know what I mean? It's like that the great communication wave.
Well,
it's like everyone's got a fucking blog. It's like
you can get the T-shirt, and I can't remember if it was The Onion or someone else, but it's like more. The T-shirt says more people have read my T-shirt than your blog. And I heard some other statistic that may or may not be true, but it's like the average blog gets read by one person. You know, it's like, oh, probably the person who wrote it, you know. Because there are some blogs get read by a lot of people, but there are a lot of fucking blogs out there.
But yeah, when YouTube, I mean, I slow motion on the electronic, but I mean, you know, the revolution that just happened in Iran, you know, I mean, that really made me think, like, you know, the plus for me is like, in there's no hiding your, as a government or whatever, your fucked up behavior anymore. You know, it's going to be on, you can be able to see it the very next day. I think that could be positive, or just make people a little cautious about that stuff.
Do you think YouTube is more free than the art world?
No.
Isn't there a lot of barriers you have to go through to get your work seen by anyone?
Isn't there a lot of stuff that is
YouTube?
But I mean, I just haven't it seen might not be the primary. You know, like, what am I going to see? You know? I mean, that's like famous for being famous. You know, like, why just being seen maybe is would be a secondary goal.
Well, there's also the assumption that because it's on YouTube, somebody watches it.
Yeah.
You know, because you could probably say the same about YouTube videos that you could say about blogs.
Yeah.
I mean, how many don't get seen by anyone?
Yeah, it's sort of a problem of like, well, yeah, we have all this freedom and anyone can sort of tap into these resources, but then again, anyone can tap into these resources, right? So like, on both ends, you know. So
it's good that hard work.
Well, not necessarily. All I'm saying is like that is sort of the underbelly of like the egalitarian nature of like blogs and the internet and the whatever all that sort of stuff is like, yeah. Your music page on MySpace isn't probably going to get you anywhere. Just as you know, making something necessarily isn't going to get you anywhere in the art world.
I still love going to galleries and museums. It just feels kind of cheap.
YouTube.
I don't know. Painting is so slow, and I love it.
Yeah, I'm into it. Slower. But YouTube is interesting. You know, we ask how it felt. Cool, interesting. Cool. Yeah, it's not much.
Well, it's really, I mean, it's about quantity, right? There's so much stuff on it, but of course there's got to be something interesting.
Totally, yeah.
It's not mutually exclusive, though, either. Mm-hmm. You see some great Johnson performances.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's not like the finely curated thing.
No. I'm thinking about, like, you know, that, like, you should be like the free space or something. That asking about who that's really hard to me is novelists, I think. You know, like, you could really be a talented novelist and you write this thing and you've got a manuscript and you really have to, come on, Luke, read my manuscript. Come on. All the commitment and to sustain for like a good novel for that long to for the most to take to write it. And then to rely so heavily on the market for anybody to read it, you know, at least we could say like, oh, I'm setting easels up by the side, or I'm having a show, you know. But with a novel, I feel for them because I haven't really, reading. I admire writers. I don't know how to do it, but I think they have a hard way to go.
On that note, there's like this German artist that I recently saw, like his name is Joseph Strau. And he's like working on a novel, and he just like puts his pages right on the canvas and shows those.
That's good.
So like giving feedback while he's writing. Do you guys care if common folks are sitting here?
What do you mean common folks? People have to work.
I didn't hear the last. I didn't hear the last thing you said. Can you repeat the question?
Do you care if not common folks are sitting here?
What the common folks?
Contemporary artists. I think they're non-artists.
Do that, like, someone that goes to college?
No, I'm a true school teacher, or, like, a...
general public.
Do you understand that?
Blue collar worker.
Did he say, do you care if they understand it?
Yeah.
I always thought that question was a little bit like saying, like, to a novelist, well, do you care about the people who can't?
Yeah. Or I always think, like, you know, I don't feel, like, do you feel, can you give a critique of a nuclear power reactor? You know, I just, oh yeah, it looks pretty good to me. this is what I found. I mean, I bet everyone in this room has found that, is that you know people generally don't care if you ever make another artwork in your life. And sometimes you get the opportunity to watch somebody look at something. And sometimes some of those objects you may even think like, well, shit, this one turned out, this is really pretty. Yeah,
what are
people gonna get this? This one's, everyone's gonna like it. And then you know, people you thought like, wow, this is so dumb, and I'm not even sure it's any good, but I bet you know it's gonna be popular. And sure enough, people are like, the hair on that dog's fucked up, or you know, like this. You cannot win, so you really can't win.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Aaron, what's the name of the artist who made the like bicycle tipping over by the White House again?
I don't know. Was it? I couldn't remember. Is it Bastian Otter who did that one?
Well, there's that piece of work is really. I had never seen it, but I read about it in that thing that we were reading. And this guy.
In 4 hours, it'll
be late. This guy he was riding his bicycle and he like tipped it over in front of this. White House that like Mondrian painted all the time, and it's like that's funny to me as a person, I think, not as an artist, but it's also interesting to me as an artist.
Yeah.
And I want to make stuff like that. That's like that people get into even if and they don't feel like they have to go to school to get into.
Yeah. See, I would say I don't make for the general population, but I definitely like hope that my artwork can transcend like the art community. Like I think of like Mercutio Catalan and like his Hitler piece, and like that spoke to everyone, and like that's a piece that has such power that it doesn't matter if you know the art lingo, like you can understand the power of that sculpture.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the fact that it has obvious craft and skill is it helps it get over like that?
I grew up a bit as Fifth Man Hitler, you know.
and that's the problem, because I don't consider myself both like technically gifted artists by any means. And so that's like a struggle, and that's what I mean, like I don't think that I can make for the general public.
He didn't make that, you know. He didn't make it. He commissioned craftspeople to make that piece.
Well, that's like, how do you communicate to somebody that you're sincere, that you were like totally serious about what you did? And like, one of the ways to do that, especially when you're communicating with people that work jobs and they have to do things every day, is like, you do it through the sincerity of like how you execute your material. That's like one way of being like, I care about this. But like, it's harder to like communicate that you care about something when it's a lot of it is like talking and like knowing history about art, and you do something that maybe takes 5 minutes to do, but it's like a really big deal. Like, how do you make that a big deal for other people?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an actual question.
Yeah. How do you make something valuable to someone else?
Yeah, that's a question.
Yeah.
I think that work is valued in America, but art is valued in Europe.
Yeah.
More so. Just art artist has a sort of cultural capital that we don't understand.
You meet someone there and you say, what do you do? And you say, I'm an artist. And you're so used to this reaction of like, oh, yes, yeah, or, you know, whatever. Like, okay,
it's like
you're
in there for a
job. So, but you know, you say that to somebody over there and it's like, oh, cool, artist. You know, like, it's actually something that garners some respect.
It's almost the opposite, where you don't even have to justify it at all.
Yeah. But I think what her question, in a sense, is that I walk around every day and how can a person know that I'm earnest in what I'm doing and sincere in what I'm doing, right? And especially at the labor of the day, right?
Do you think do you even think they can? I think it's like, do you think they can?
With
like, it could communicate in that way that you're saying, you know, not be off-putting maybe, or if it didn't show that craft or the sincerity was all in one of those ways.
It's not right. I don't know. I mean, maybe like, maybe, like, probably a lot of people, like, don't actually care. A lot of artists probably don't, like, actually care about that. That's just something I care about, that I, like, want to be, since I want it to be sincere without me having to, like, you know, convince someone with my words.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
I was going to say, you know, part of it's like, I don't have the energy to care sometimes about how people feel about it. Like, because you do it. And if people can't see it, what can I do about that? Not a lot, you know? Someone's got to care about it. And you have to choose who those people you want to care about it is.
I guess this gets back to, like, that value judgment problem, which is, like, a huge problem, I think.
Yeah, what you're saying, the two things you're saying, one is, I don't want to say anything about it. I don't want to use words. I just want them to know.
Well, I didn't say that. I don't necessarily. I mean, I like using words.
No, I think you can with words. I mean, I think once you engage what other people do, and then you talk like, I'm actually thinking about this. I mean, I'm using highfalutin words. David Hickey goes way out of his way not to use highfalutin words. Because if you use those kinds of that kind of language around people that are in the person of lay terms, right, the layman. Then you're just lording over them and the insecurity that they don't know anything about art anyway, so let me throw some lingo at you. If you talk in an average way, the thing you're concerned about, most times people will, they're not going to agree with you if they're going to go, oh, but you're into this. Just like you're into cats. Right? Old cats.
The musical, right?
Yes.
See, I'm just not that concerned about convincing people who aren't engaged with art.
Part of our conversation before, like the, you know, being a doctor versus being an artist. And America sees, you know, we're all about pragmatism and what is beneficial to society is what's important. And a lot of people don't see art as beneficial to society.
Yeah. And that, my point, you know, I don't care, I don't read David Hickey, I read Buchla or Krauss or, you know, Isabel Grau or someone like that. And I don't want to put my energy in trying to convince people
So you wouldn't design with them, Aaron. You just wouldn't talk to them.
Well, I, you know, if they ask, if someone cares enough to ask,
right.
I can try to explain it to them, and that's fine. But that's something different.
No, okay. So I have a small story.
Okay.
I'm looking at a Jackson Pollock, and there's a guy that comes in. My students have heard it, and he's World War II bomber. And he sees this Jackson Pollock on the wall, and he goes, "Wow, man, that's like flying over Germany. It's all like aerial. I feel like I'm just flying over Germany." And I'm like, this other woman comes in, and I'm just sitting there. I'm looking at it. And she's like, "Oh, you don't understand how important Jackson Pollock is. You don't know what he did for his art." And she started to try to talk to him, right? And the guy, I finally stopped her and I said, "Oh, well, actually, he gets it. This painting was made on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
He understands this painting in a way that you're not really talking about." And that was an average person looking at a work of art that they didn't understand the history and listen to the language. And isn't that what we're talking about? Isn't that what you want?
Emily?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's a great example. But, so were you talking about the other person who came who was like...
She was using a lot of language, and she wasn't an artist. And she was not really communicating with this
person.
Well,
yeah, she was just an asshole. Like,
well, maybe not. Maybe that's just how she communicates. But the guy just happened to get it. And no one knew that he was getting it.
Right.
At least on one level. So, I think that's valuable.
Oh, that's great. And that, you know, I'd love it if everybody understood art, but, you know, it's just not the way to go. And people don't care about it. And people will ask you who don't care about it. That's the other, that's the really painful situation, right? It's like, will you tell me, what are you doing here? And I don't really care, but I want you to talk and give me your one-liner, your elevator speech, like we're talking. Except even dumber than the elevator speech, give me that. And it's like, I don't want to do that.
Well,
it hurts to do that.
Yeah, I saw this one critique once at MCAT. It was like with one of my best friends. And like during the critique, like he couldn't find the words to describe what he's trying to do. And like I made this suggestion after the critique that I like got in our own community and it was like a suggestion, like when you're talking to, you know, other people that aren't artists, like someone you're providing service to. And I was like, well, I mean, like you might have to use vocabulary that's like different, and you know, and like I kind of like, I'm not sure if I've said the words dumbing it down, but his response was immediately, well, I don't want to and I shouldn't have to, in a way. And like, I'm not sure if that's like the same kind of dialogue that you're talking to, where it's like, well, why, I shouldn't, like, I'm not saying that you should like be an artist as genius, elitist kind of person, but I'm saying that like, why waste your energy when you're trying to like actually make something progressive for yourself?
I always make these parallels, and I think you're kind of hinting towards this, kind of saying that in a similar thing. Tell me if you're not.
No,
but I always go to this science parallel, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
Just because the scientists can't explain to you what they're doing in the high energy particle physics lab doesn't mean it's not legitimate, and I'm not going to, you can explain it all day, and you can dumb it down enough so I can say, oh yeah, I get it. I don't get it. I don't understand what you're saying. I don't really understand what you're doing. And you know, and the other thing is the application thing. Well, what's it going to be good for?
Right.
My art's not going to be good for something. You're not going to have clearer cell phone, better cell phone coverage of my art, I don't think, really. But I don't, you know, I, like, to me, that, but in some ways that's legitimate, right? You could say you want to be the more practical scientist who does something that leads to more immediate practical applications. To me, I always feel like I'm the particle physicist scientist.
Yeah.
I just, like, don't ask me what the application is. I can talk to you, but I'm not going to, you know, it's going to be using every part of my brain. And hopefully every part of your brain.
Oh.
What painting were you looking at when you took over?
That's kind of exactly what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to figure out a way to like make the artist not seem. I don't know. I have to figure out how to say this. Like when you put it that way, like I completely understand that it's like what Bruce was saying earlier with like, nice reactor. Like, what do you say? Like, you're not gonna understand it.
Yeah.
And that's just because like your context and everything. And well, like we're artists and trying to like do something. Like that something's an exchange with someone else. Like regardless who or how many it is. And how do you not be an asshole? How do you not be an elitist? And I think these are just questions that I'm asking, not getting answers, because you can't answer them.
Yeah, they're unanswerable, I think.
And just, I mean, I think sometimes we think that maybe if, you know, if you were into any, let's say you knew the shortstop stats for the Boston Red Sox from 1947, and people do, you know. I mean, we're kind of in that same thing. It's kind of a rarefied territory, and there is a language, and Registry told you, you are obliged. I can't call this the ceiling and have people expect to understand. You know, there's a language for it. It's legit, you know. I mean, I don't speak French, but my assumption isn't that French is stupid.
It's like
false kind of communication.
It's like Latin, but you just don't understand
it. Yeah, I don't understand it. You know, I need to study.
This reminds me of, I think, a little lecture in critical studies you were giving about, 60s conceptualism and how it was an attempt to like become less elitist in terms of like it doesn't require a specific set of like technical skills or like very simple instructions to it, but mass public had the worst reaction to it that the mass public has ever had to art in general, and it became more elitist somehow.
Or it was perceptive.
Yeah, it did. It definitely had, but so did, I'm sure modernism had a reaction as well. I wasn't around for the conceptual thing in the 60s, obviously. But,
I mean, and that's the frustration for artists. That's why I'm the particle physicist.
You can also be the other kind of scientist, though, too, that it's kind of proves what we already know is true. Everybody knows it's true. Like I saw,
casts are useless. We just learned that, right?
They really don't do anything for us.
We knew that all along.
Spend $11 million on this, maybe. But
there's something important about proving it too.
Exactly, but people don't get that either.
Yeah, they don't get that either.
You can be going out in history, you can be making work that's pretty self-evident. That's almost as bad as people not getting over it. Wow, you spent 3 years on that.
Well,